Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Paddle Pod, your weekly podcast covering professional paddle presented by Hugo and Gons. We're on to episode 78. And as always, joined by my co-host, Hugo, here today. Hugo, it's great to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Gons. Just had a long weekend down by the beach, so can't complain. I mean, 23 degrees, sun, a bit of a shock to come back to Madrid. It's now freezing cold here, isn't it?
Yeah, very much. And it's one of the great things about moving to Spain. We have a lot of public holidays, and I recently moved from the UK, and in the UK there's barely any bank holidays, so it's quite nice, quite refreshing. I also enjoyed a long weekend myself, even though I did stay in Madrid. But despite the fact that it is getting very cold now, it's still quite sunny, which is just really enjoyable as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely better than the UK when it's just obviously we live there, as our fans know, or many of our fans will know, having heard many of our, experiences over in the UK. We lived there for a long time and dealing with the rain and the, just the lack of sunshine and lack of brightness in general is tough. So we can't complain. But yeah, it is actually quite cold in Madrid for those of you who don't know. I mean, it's 700 meters above sea level. So the winter months are cold. But hey, as long as there's sun, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe moving on to the episode, we've had the Milan P1, and now it's really starting to hit me that the end of paddle for the 2024 season is very, very near. I mean, in fact, for a lot of players, it's the season's over, right? And but for a lot of them, there's still or for the top players, I shall say, there's still obviously the final tournament of the year, the Masters final in Madrid. Sorry, not in Madrid, in Barcelona actually. And but yeah, we did have the Milan P1, and it brought back the El Clasico, let's just call it. And we actually hadn't seen it for what felt like ages, right? I mean, we were so accustomed to seeing a final of Tapia Coelho versus Chingoto Angalán, and then we had that mini break. Of two finals, if I'm not mistaken, which kind of made it seem like an eternity. But once again, I mean, it did not matter. The setting can change, but the result will always be the same, at least for this season or the second half of the season. Fabian Coelho were prevalent, and they did win the Milan P1 in a quite a tight affair, to be honest. 6-4, 7-5. I thought it was a great final and a great match, but maybe before giving my full thoughts, I'll hand it over to you, Hugo, as I'd love to hear what you thought of the final and the tournament as well.
Well, I think just overall, the tournament was pretty high level. I think the players showed a high level themselves throughout. And even though a lot of them are probably struggling with injuries, I mean, we saw a few players on the, particularly female players, get injured and have niggles and also pull out. I mean, so sad to see Bel González having to pull out again, given her long-term injury throughout this season and the variety of injuries that she suffered. So all the best, and we hope it's not—it's nothing too serious. Then we also had Stolpa, which was slightly different. He walked into, well, he ran into the umpire's chair and had to pull out of his quarterfinal match against Momo González and Edu Alonso. So again, hopefully that's nothing serious, and he can make the tour finals. But yeah, even though players are obviously suffering due to, a very long season, a lot of flights having, just having caught a lot of flights and having traveled a lot, I think the level's still pretty high. Now, it's not the peak of the season, that's for sure, but I think we should be pretty happy with the showing in Milan and over the last few weeks. Now, looking at the final specifically, I think there's probably two ways to look at it. One way would be, hey, great to see Chingoto Angalán, fighting toe to toe with Dabian Goya once again, after having suffered quite a few, spankings as per se over the last few months. And I mean, when you look at actually at the points total of the match, there was only a 3-point difference between the amount of points that Dabian Goya won and the amount of points that Galán and Chingoto won, which is amazing. I mean, that just shows how tight it was. So that's probably one way of looking at it. I mean, it was very tight. Both sets were just a breaks difference, and one could argue that it could have gone either way. Now, I'd actually look at it in a slightly, well, through a slightly different mirror and focusing on Galan and Chingoto. I really think alarm bells are on for them in terms of what their aspirations are for next season. I mean, this season is basically over. If they win the Tour Finals in Barcelona, that would be sensational. Obviously, it's the most important tournament of the season, but they haven't achieved their objective of reaching the number one spot. And they actually haven't won a tournament since, what, July, is it? So I really think that, particularly for Galan, who, given his level recently and given, well, he literally said that his main objective for the season was getting back to the number one position in the world. He's failed. And he must start, well, he must be feeling, I mean, we can see his anxiety on court, but he's probably feeling a bit anxious off court, just feeling like he doesn't know how to get through Dabian Coello. And that gap between him and the number ones is just getting bigger and bigger. So that should be concerning. And even though the final was very tight in terms of the score, it always felt like Dabian Coello were more in control. Now, that may be because they were a bit calmer, because they've achieved their objective and they haven't got that much left to play for. But I just think that they're now in Chingo Dongalan's heads. And that is a problem going forward. I don't know what your thinks. Well, what your thoughts and what you thought of the final.
Yeah, similar feeling to what you said in terms of maybe the score not actually being reflective of what you saw and felt during the match, even though a lot of the games, even where Dabian Coello broke Chingalan, you know, they were really tight games. They went to deuce and so on. So it could have really gone either way. But it just, even in those games, you almost felt like when they wanted, Dabian Coello could really just kind of turn it up, you know, find two, three other gears that Chingalan couldn't, and they could just really turn it on and kind of pull away when they wanted to. That's kind of like the feeling of the match, even though the score might suggest was not like that. And I think it kind of boils down to ultimately what we always say about Dabian Coello and Chingalan as well, which is the difference between Dabian Coello and the rest is how good they are in those key moments and the key points. And the fact that they were able to generate a lot of break points but convert them as well, I think that's another key aspect of the final. Because once again, Chingalan able to generate 7 break points but only converting one of them. I mean, that's really poor. You certainly can't do that against Coello and Tapia, because they don't give you many opportunities. So when you do have those opportunities, you have to take them. And Dabian Coello, on the other hand, they just are so good at taking those opportunities whenever they get them. And they're able to play the important points so well. So I think that's like the kind of the main highlight. I do kind of want to highlight that it still was a really good match from Chingalan. I mean, the contribution scores suggest that they had a decent match, right? We've seen times where they haven't had like a positive contribution score. And for example, Galan's numbers, I thought, were quite decent. So plus 8.1 contribution score, 17 winners, 8 unforced errors. Of course, it's nothing like spectacular that we've seen him before, but it's still quite a decent showing, right? You wouldn't say, oh my God, Galan's had like a bad match. Chingoto probably, well, the worst of the two, with 12 winners and 10 unforced errors. I think from the winner's perspective, it's something that you can live with, but from Chingoto, you definitely can't live with 10 unforced errors. You definitely would want to see that number be a bit lower. So, I mean, all in all, it's a good performance. And I do think, compared to kind of the finals that we had seen in the past from them, it is kind of an improvement, I would say. I also think that Galan has had sort of better individual performances as of late. It does feel sometimes, you know, he's frustrated and all of that on court. But I think there was a moment, especially kind of at the beginning of the second half of the season, where he just generally wasn't playing that well. And I think now he's kind of been playing a bit better. Obviously, still not good enough to beat Coello and Tapia. But I mean, it's a fair point that you have, because it kind of feels like, you know, have we seen the ceiling of Chingalan? I think that's kind of my main worry for them next year. And potentially what Galan is thinking about is this the ceiling, right? You know, for that moment where they first joined, that sort of second half of the towards the summer, you know, like let's say from April to July, those months, was that the peak? Is that how far they can get to? I think that's probably the worry. And we shall see. I mean, I still think that they'll definitely start the 2025 season together. But if it does seem, very similar to how they've been ending this year in terms of just not being able to break through, then, I mean, yeah, alarm bells have to be on in that case.
Yeah, I mean, when we actually extrapolate and look at other years and the pairs that have, well, fought for the number one spot and not made it, they've always gone the other way and they've ended up splitting very soon after. I mean, I'm thinking of Paquito and Dineno when they were very close to clinching that one number one spot in their race against Galan and Lebron towards the end of their tenure together. They were very close and then they didn't make it. The start of the next season was tough and they split. And then the same thing happened with Stupa and Dineno when they chased Tapia Nguyễn for a whole season. They didn't make it and they split. And it just feels like Chingalan, they were so close this season. They obviously have had a great season when you look at it objectively. But over the last, as I say, what is it, 5, 6 months, they haven't won a tournament. And they've also lost a couple of matches against other pairs. I mean, it's only been Stupa and Yanguas, but they have lost to other pairs beyond Tapia and Coelho. So if I had to bet, I think we probably have seen their ceiling. I'd be amazed if they suddenly managed to turn it round, come back and reach the number one spot. It'd be great. I mean, I think for paddle, it would be great. There's probably a lot of people tired of seeing Tapia and Coelho at the top. That's not me. But it'd be great for the sport and, I mean, for spectators to see Chingalan continue to perform at this level or even go higher and play better. I just don't think it's going to happen. So that's why I think it's slightly concerning for them. And particularly, as we've obviously expressed, Galan, given how ambitious he is and how well he's been playing, because as we've agreed, it's him, Tapia Nguyễn, who make up the top three players in the world. There's no doubt right now, and there hasn't been a doubt for the last year. He's probably thinking, who can give me the edge to start challenging them? But actually, what I did want to pose is, based on this final, because it's happened once again, but also throughout the whole season, I think the differential, once again, as I say, and it's been the same for the last few weeks, was Coelho. I mean, he had more winners than anyone else on the court and fewer unforced errors than anyone else on the court. Now, I think that's one of the first times that I've seen that happen in this El Clasico between these four players. We've seen maybe Galan produce the biggest amount of winners for many times, but he's had more unforced errors than others, or at least more unforced errors than the best out of the others in that stat. And we've seen Chingoto produce the lowest unforced errors many times, but not be able to compete in the winners kind of, well, bracket. And Coelho this time has shown that he can do it. And it's amazing how consistency, well, how consistent he is given how many risks he takes on court. So, I mean, I thought it was sensational. And that leads into my question. Who do you think's been the best player of the season? Because I think now is the time to debate because we've got next week's tournament. Well, sorry, the tour finals in 2 weeks' time. But hey, we can probably discuss already because I don't think much is going to change.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because it's probably a question I actually wanted to pose myself to you. I mean, I don't. I guess we will do like a final year review and all of that. So maybe I'll leave my full answer till then. But I mean, I was going to pose the exact same question to you because I mean, I generally think Coyo has a very strong case and argument to be named this season's MVP. Because I don't know if you remember, but when we kind of had, we did a small awards or review, I feel like at the beginning of the season. And we both said that Coelho was ahead of Tapia, if I'm not mistaken. And he, because up, I feel like up until Chingalan joined, he was like, I thought better, like playing better than Tapia. Then Tapia had a really good stretch when Chingalan started to beat Coelho and Tapia consistently. I mean, Tapia was really the one kind of holding them together and making, winning, I guess, from their side and making it a bit more even. But the second half of the season, I mean, I think that's Coelho completely. And once again in this final, as you highlighted with the stats, I mean, he was Absolutely sensational. So I don't think you can debate the second half of the season that Goy has been the better player. And I generally think that sort of at the beginning, him as well, I would probably put him slightly ahead. And then that'd be obviously maybe kind of being a bit better in that's I guess towards like the summer and stuff and pre-summer. So it's really, really interesting because I mean it's really tight. I think that he's been absolutely sensational and he's finishing the year, I mean, stronger than I mean the right now I'd say he is the best player in the world. And for the season, I think he has a very strong argument to be the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've elaborated quite a lot, and I agree with pretty much all of your arguments. And once again, I don't want to give too much depth to my answer because I'm sure we'll discuss this further. And it's a great question that we definitely want to hear, well, our viewers and our fans' thoughts on, because obviously it's one of the most relevant questions of the year. But yeah, I mean, I think Goyo has definitely been the differential in this Galan Chingoto versus Tapia Nguyễn matchup. Because Tapia and Galan in that cross-court battle have, I'd say, almost performed at the same level. Maybe Tapia has been slightly better because obviously they've won more matches. And I have a feeling that in the key moments during these matches, he's been slightly better than Galan, even though maybe Galan's raw stats may have been even better. But I just think Goyo throughout the season, he's just never slipped below an 8 out of 10. Now, I know he had a bad patch with his smash and his aerial play in general. And he was struggling to deal with Chingoto's, well, his game generally, just the fact that he was playing great lobs and then he was playing a very strong Biwara into Goyo that he wasn't managing to handle. But the way he's managed to adapt and now completely dominate Chingoto in that cross-court battle, because, I mean, Chingoto, during the key moments in this P1 Milan final, he looked a bit lost. He didn't really know what to do, and he was committing really uncharacteristic, unforced errors for him, given that he is probably the most consistent player in the world in terms of, well, producing the least amount of unforced errors per game. So that's what Goya's caused in Chingoto's game. And, well, as I say, I mean, he is a machine of producing winners, and it's amazing how his unforced error count is so low throughout every single match that we watch. So, yeah, right now I have the same feeling. We'll see whether it changes when we kind of attack this question again, whether it's next week or whenever we do so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a really interesting one because I think there's a lot of angles you can go with this. And to be honest, I think they're all the answers between Koi and Tapia. Like, I could see the argument on both sides, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I mean, totally. And some people could argue Alan, and I would understand it because he's obviously the odd one out in terms of not being next to one of the top three players in the world. And his raw stats could even be the best across all of these players. It'd be interesting to look at them. I mean, our colleagues from Paddle Up, I'm sure, have been analyzing them throughout the whole season. Obviously, we've got Paddle Intelligence's stats as well. So I'm sure something will come out and we can, you know, chat about it in more depth. But yeah, it's definitely one of those three, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for sure there are I would say there's definitely a lot of wrong answers, but there can also be so basically every single one that's not out of that top three, it's a wrong answer for sure. But I'll allow any argument for those top three, basically.
So not Alex Ruiz then.
I mean, I think he probably himself thinks that, you know, or would say that he has a lot to improve next season. But we'll see. I mean, I'm sure he will. I still think that, you know, he's had a lot of injuries and stuff like that. So maybe ahead of next season, he can, you know, find that sort of stability and consistency that he needs.
I'm
But
sure he will.
yeah, maybe actually something that I did want to talk about kind of before we end. Well, there's two things actually about the Milan P1. First thing, maybe let's just go for a quick mention because we had to say farewell to a legend. Fernando Velasteguin played his last match as a professional paddle player, which is kind of insane to say. And I mean, incredibly emotional. He lost to Garrido and Bergamini in the round of 16. But still, I feel like, you know, obviously the impact that he's had on the game and kind of the legacy that he's left is will never, I don't think it will ever be matched, to be honest, you know, for how much he's meant for the game and all the records that he's achieved. But kind of just want to say that I feel like towards the end of the season, I definitely found like a better Bella performance-wise. I thought that his partnership with Livak was kind of sound, and it was nice to finally see him kind of back to the backhand, even though it might have meant like he couldn't advance further because he felt like, you know, when he switched to the forehand, he probably felt like he needed someone to finish the points for him. But it was really nice to see that change and pair up with someone as young with Livak. And arguably kind of had a big impact on Livak because, you know, we've seen his best performance when he's been with Belan, how he's coached so many top, well, back then young players and now in, you know, the top, the best players in the world, he's been alongside them as well. So yeah, I just want a quick mention to Bela, and he will be missed.
Yeah, I mean, thanks very much for mentioning that because I definitely wanted to, well, talk about it throughout the episode, and I was maybe going to save it until the end, but I think Bella's worth more than that. I mean, I just think undoubtedly he is the GOAT, looking at results and his longevity. And what really amazes me is how he's managed to keep amongst the top, well, would it be the top 30 players in the world this season? I don't know. Maybe 40, but last season would have been the top 20 even, and the season before maybe it was the top 15. I mean, not long ago, I remember when he teamed up with Sanyo, and they were actually very close to reaching the number one spot in that race against Ale Galán and Juan Lebrón. I mean, they were very, very close, and that was not that long ago. So it's just amazing how he's adapted to today's padel, which is so different to the way he played. He is, I mean, he epitomizes kind of classic paddle in a way because he focuses on, well, or his game has focused on producing the least amount of unforced errors possible, being incredibly well, incredibly consistent with his bandeja and his lob, which are clearly his two best shots. And he's obviously worked wonders in that sense. So it's amazing how on today's courts, which are so fast, and playing against today's players who are so different to players before, and they're taller, stronger, faster, more aggressive, he's managed to still, well, make a name for himself. And I genuinely think that if it weren't to, well, if it wasn't, if he hadn't had that many injuries, he would have probably kept performing to a highest, well, definitely higher standard than what he's shown throughout this last year, year and a half. But who knows? I mean, I wouldn't put it past him maybe being in the top 20 players throughout this season before he retired. So yeah, I mean, what a man. And as I say, I think the GOAT has left us and it's sad, but I think Paddle is in good hands, as he very much, well, alluded to in his farewell speech during the Milan P1. He said that Paddle's never been played at the level that it's being played today, and I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nuts when you think about it, the fact that he's 45 and he's reached like quarterfinals this year, for example, in the Malaga P1, in the Rotterdam P1 as well. Like, it's absolutely insane. I mean, he's 45 years old playing against, you know, kids that are, as you said, like, you know, way faster than him, way stronger than him, and he's still managing to reach kind of the later stages of a tournament in the Pro Tour. It's remarkable, to be honest. So I don't think, to be honest, I just don't think we'll ever see someone, you know, at his age in the future being able to be that good and reach kind of these stages and still be in the top 30 ranking wise. It's just honestly remarkable. So yeah, I mean, big farewell. And I'm sure that, I mean, I'd love to see him coach, like getting into coaching. I don't know if he's mentioned at all anything, you know, about what he plans to do in the future, but knowing how he basically lives for paddle and how good he is, kind of that kind of father mentor like figure, I'd just love to see him in the bench and coaching, you know, one of these big, or like, you know, top prospects or the big players. I'd love to see that. So hopefully we will see him maybe not on court as such, but on the side bench. That'd be quite nice.
I'm sure we will, because as you say, it just feels like he definitely has so much paddle in his head. And even though obviously all the top players have a lot of paddle in their heads and they know a lot about the game, they may not be able to express it in the best way. And when you listen to Vela just talking about the game, and when benches are kind of listened into, he's just always making the right points and kind of, just providing positive feedback about himself, about his partner, about the rivals. He's just always right, pretty much. So, I'd love to see him on the bench. Who knows? Maybe the next World Cup in 2 years, he might be Argentina's coach. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and maybe one last quick thing that I did want to mention as well, which I thought was kind of one of the highlights of the tournament. So we have new young prospects in town. I mean, Ramiro Valenzuela and Paul Hernandez. What a performance by them, reaching the round of 16. I mean, nearly taking away a set from Chingalán and beating in three sets Leal and Campagnolo, who are clearly very good players. I mean, ranked, they're the 15th seeded pair. So, very established players. And the fact that Valenzuela and Paul Hernandez managed to beat them in three sets and really pose like an incredible battle against Chingalán. I mean, huge tournament from them. And yeah, I mean, great players. I love their energy. Valenzuela, especially on the backhand side, sorry, I mean, looks like an insane prospect. The smash is incredible, and just the overall play I thought was really exciting. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing them next season, kind of getting into more main draws and seeing them more often. But I mean, they're looking like a very well, kind of like the next, I guess the next Mini Pibes, one could say maybe.
That's not a bad shout, actually. I was unbelievably impressed with their game. The fact that they knocked out Leal and Campagnolo, who are very established players. I mean, Leal is obviously still very young, but a lot of people are talking about him as one of the next big things. And Campagnolo obviously has been around for many years, and they knocked them out. And then against Chingalan, losing 7-6, 7-5, or vice versa, I mean, they could easily have won that match. I mean, there was only a breaks difference in serve, and obviously the tie break, which is nothing really. So really, really impressed by both of them. As you say, Valenzuela being on the backhand carries a bit more of the volume of the play, as backhand players tend to do. And amazing how risk-taking he is and how happy he is to just say, hey, I'm gonna put the weight of my pair on my back and go for this shot. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. So very impressed, particularly given that neither of them are very tall and they don't seem to be very kind of, they're not the standard body type in terms of how you'd design the perfect paddle player today. It would be definitely be a bit taller, maybe even a bit musclier. And they just seem like, as you say, a great prospect for the next, what, 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, Nox and Adidas have definitely made some good bets. And regarding Paul and Hernandez specifically, I think that he has everything that a modern forehand player needs in terms of, you can't just say, hey, I'm gonna help my partner by not producing many unforced errors and having good lobs, but it's everything. It's I'm gonna try and contribute in attack. I've got to be aggressive both at the back of the court and also at the net. And his lobs were pretty pinpoint perfect against Chingalan specifically. I watched that whole match, and it was really impressive. So excited to see what the future holds for them, because I think it's going to be very good things.
Yeah, I'm sure that we'll start to see them a lot more frequently in kind of the main draws next year, because they're looking like a very exciting pair. But Hugo, I think that probably brings us to the end of the episode. As always, it's been a pleasure talking to you about paddle and the Milan P1 specifically. This week, no tournament. Players are getting a little bit of rest, and then well, the 16th, right? If I'm not mistaken, when do the finals start,
I think
actually? Is it on a
it's the
Thursday, right?
18th. 18th, which is a Thursday. No, or 19th, which is a Thursday. It's one of the 2 days, but yeah, it's
Yeah.
quarterfinals, semifinals, and final because obviously it's only eight pairs. And I think it does start on the Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. So that would be the 19th.
Yeah, so a bit of a break, but we will be back next week with an episode, maybe a little bit of a preview of the finals. But yeah, I do hope that everyone's enjoyed. Please leave your thoughts in the comments on everything that we discussed. And yeah, Hugo, has always been a pleasure, and catch you next time.
Have a great week, guys. See you soon.